All right, everybody, we're going to get started. Can you guys hear us okay? Great. Okay, well, my name is Jeannie Dumont. I have the pleasure of being on stage with four absolutely amazing women. I was very, very excited to get them recruited and up here to do this Pitch Perfect panel. So a couple things. One, we all know we are underrepresented in this industry, both from a kind of role perspective and also from just getting a share of dollars in getting games published. And so rather than focus on the gender issues that may be, you know, in our way, we wanted to instead share some best practices and get these four women who are experts in the industry from a creative perspective, from a business development perspective, and from a publishing perspective, and kind of share those do's and don'ts and everything in between to help you get your ideas out there and get those games pitching. And it is pitching season, by the way, so take notes, encourage you to do that, and afterwards, if you have ideas and you want to talk, we've got quite a few people who are open to doing that. Shanae T. Bryant here from Private Division, which is Take-Two's independent publishing arm, as well as Katie Stone Perez here with her cohort, Nate, and I'm sure there's other folks around too that would love to hear your ideas, so we'll just put that out there. So let's get these women introduced. We have first Shanae T. Bryant from Private Division, as I mentioned. She's got over 15 years experience in the industry from all different genres, as well as different technologies, working in AR, VR, and MR. And now she runs the pipeline from pitch to production for their new independent game studio. And we have Ada Dwan, who leads she's the general manager leading the business development team at Xbox, which oversees the portfolio and business relationships for Microsoft Game Studios, the second-party publishing arm, the third-party publishing arm, the ID at Xbox program, Mixer, and Game Pass. So that's pretty amazing, pretty epic. We have Tatiana Deslova, who is with EA's DICE LA studio, and she has worked on heavy-hitting franchises including Forza Motorsport, Need for Speed, and Battlefield. And most recently, she has pitched her top secret prototype project to leaders over at EA. And then we have Robin Honeycke, CEO and co-founder of Phenomenon, who is known for kind of pushing the boundaries of what a game can actually be, and has her IGF-nominated game, Luna, which you can actually play upstairs, as well as the PS3 hit Journey. And so what we're going to do is we kind of have three stages for our discussion today. We're going to start hearing from their perspective, starting from creative, going into business development, and then publishing. From there, we've got a few questions we're going to tee up for discussion. And then the last part, we're going to open it up to audience questions. All right, so why don't we get started? Let's hear from creative side of the business.
All right, it's on. Yeah, it works. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming. So a lot of people ask me, how do I pitch games, or who should I pitch to, or how does it happen, or what do you know, or how can you help me? And the first thing I always say is that it's really specific to you. So your lived experience, the thing you're passionate about, the thing you want to build is really, really important, and it's central to every aspect of what you're going to do in your life, and your pitch should be no different. So when I started making games, I came from a background in computer science and AI, and I really was fascinated by the idea of storytelling. The more I did work in that area, the more it became clear that if I kept building the things I was building, that I would be building things that killed other people, so drones and that kind of stuff. And that's where the job market was headed for people that were studying AI in the early 2000s when I was doing it. And I got interested in using games to simulate things, and then just was like, why don't I just make games? Because I'm not really into killing people. It's not what I'm into. I don't want to make stuff that destroys other people or destroys the planet. So maybe what I'll do is I'll just drop out of school and start working on games. And I went to work on The Sims. In fact, I worked with Lacey, who was up here just a minute ago. So I followed my heart out of a career that would have been very lucrative and potentially could have been incredibly destructive, who knows, into a career that was like, my parents were just like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm following my heart, you know? The very first time I pitched a game was actually in an interview at EA. I was interviewing on the Medal of Honor team, and I just decided to not answer the question and just go off with my pitch, like into the weeds. And I can tell you the game was not funded. I was pitching a game based on a comic book that I loved at the time called Street Angel, about a homeless girl that is a ninja who saves the world all the time, but nobody knows, and so she still lives on the street. And I was like, wouldn't that be the best open world game? And they were like, thanks, we'll call you. So I can tell you that there are appropriate times to pitch and inappropriate times to pitch. You can follow your dreams, but you also have to follow the rules. And so one of the rules that I try to sort of adhere to after that lesson is, if someone's not asking me, I don't force it on them. You know, I make it clear that I make video games and that I'm always looking for funding and that I have ideas. But I don't say, you know, can I tell you right now? Like, especially not in a context where people are kind of relaxing and chilling out. You have to wait for the request, but you have to offer the opportunity. Does that make sense? And it's really, it's a common courtesy. It's kind of like dating, you know? If you like someone, you should go up to them and sort of make yourself available, and then you should let them make themselves available. It should be, you know, consensual. And so I really think a lot of people get stuck on that first part. It's just like, I'm so desperate to tell you about my idea, you get stuck. And I think from the creative perspective, the thing to really focus on is what you're bringing to the table as the person you are and why this is so important to you, because that's where you're going to find the person that wants to work with you and help you get your thing made. Lots of people can give you money, but taking money from somebody who doesn't really care about what you're doing can be a really painful experience. And so I always say it's not networking, it's not pitching, it's finding your next partner. And really, really try to see it as, it's a creative partnership, it is a business partnership, and you need to have those skills as well to talk through the other stuff, but it needs to be based on your values and what you're trying to build. And if you're working with someone you don't respect, or someone doesn't respect you, it's gonna come back and bite you in the ass later. So there are not a lot of rules that I have, but that's pretty much it. You know, those things have done well for me throughout my life. The other thing is just in general, like as you age and you move through your lives in this industry, the people that you know will also become more senior and they'll be doing cool shit. And they'll come to you and say, hey, I'm the final signing person on this budget and I really want to work with you. You go, okay, let's work together. And it doesn't seem that way now because you're all young and broke and, you know, no one's ever made your games and stuff. But if you start with your values now and you build those relationships now, in your jobs or in your games that you're making on your own or in potential publisher partnerships, it'll give you so many dividends later. So don't think of it as like getting over on the other person or getting something that you don't deserve, so you're tricking them. That's another common one. Don't think of it that way. Think of it that you're looking for a partner because you want to make something great and change the world together.
That's great, thanks. Yeah. All right, Tatiana, how about you?
Can you guys hear me? So I am the most reluctant person in terms of pitching. I never, ever aspire to do it. I'm an introvert. I have debilitating fear of public speaking. I fell into it out of necessity. And I made all of the terrible, like everything I imagined could go wrong, I've experienced in the past year. Everything from drinking soda and then burping in front of an exec to not doing that again, stick to water, to actually forgetting to drink water and literally losing my voice and having to like semi-mime through the presentation. I've pitched with my creative partner, who's the lead designer, who is even worse than I am, and he's actually bailed out of the room on me once in the middle of his creative pitch. So literally, I've experienced it all.
Okay. Oh, okay. Whoa. Mic's not working. I've also, like, literally everything that could go wrong happened to me last year, and in the end of it, I am so passionate about it. So I would say don't necessarily buy into that you have to be a great pitcher. You will become a great pitcher if you do it enough. And I think I did it about 100 times. and eventually you work it out. There's nothing more fulfilling than pitching something you're really passionate about and you're able to actually articulate it to the right people at the right time. And then they're like, okay, move forward. And you're like, really? Really? Cool. Awesome. And then you like get out of the room before they change their mind. There's a few things that really have helped me that I didn't realize. One is I started from a technical program management point of view. So I was always the person who the creatives would come to with going like, we came up with all these cool things for the next iteration of Need for Speed or Forza. Can we build it? Most of the time, no. I came into this process having a very pragmatic sort of point of view. I needed to believe that what we were pitching we could actually build given the right resources. And so I think there is an authenticity that resulted from it that has been invaluable, especially as people, there's definitely an element of blue sky. You want to give people a promise of where it could go, how it can disrupt the industry, but it has to be feasible. And part of that is the team that I joined, we came out of Battlefield 1. Most of the team, most of the art team, went on to create more Battlefield 1 content. And we were this scrappy engineering, animation, technical design, myself who was doing everything in between. We were having a lot of fun. We didn't really have much of a mandate. We were trying to find some core elements of gameplay in software on an engine, Frostbite, that we were potentially going to ship some of these ideas in. And so when it came to pitching those ideas, we had a lot of confidence. People would say, like, oh, that's really hard. I've never seen it done. It's like, it's working in software. It's not pretty, but it's there. And part of that is everything, we got into software as quickly as we could. We didn't care about art. We didn't care about whether it was going to scale to 1 million people. We wanted to see if it would work for 6 people first. And things can get a lot cheaper when you have that point of view. We play tested it all the time, not just ourselves, but we invited people all through the studio. Anybody who was a guest at our studio, we forced them, we sat them down, and we had them play it for like 5-10 minutes and give us feedback. So that really built our confidence around some of the things that we were pitching. The interesting thing about pitching, which is a catch-21, is that you need to be unique and you need to differentiate. You need to sell a promise of bringing something new to the market. But the more you lean into the uniqueness, the harder it is for people to sometimes wrap their head around it. Like the less you can say it's this meets this, or it's kind of like this plus this, the less they can really understand how it could potentially be successful. So in order to counter that, in addition to the prototype, one of the things that we really have leaned into is trying to make it as easy for people to continue investing as possible, both in terms of being smart of what we were building. We weren't saying we needed a 300-man team right away next month in order to prove this out. We were saying, hey, we need maybe like 3 more people. We need this. We need like, we can outsource this part. We also did focus tests. We did play tests. We found data that professors were studying player behavior, like outlining how some of this could tie directly. And most important is we found those business opportunities within all of the AAA business decks that circle around during all hands meeting, and basically tied of how this could feed those business needs. We made it as easy to connect the dots as possible for the people who were the decision makers. And it wasn't always sexy when we presented it this way to other game teams. They're like, I'm missing the emotional wow factor. But when you're pitching to like people who are spending the money and taking the risks, it works really, really well. And it's not necessarily just revenue. This is going to make you a billionaire. But it could be, let's say, if there is a peripheral or a platform that a specific publisher is trying to push, and this is really going to showcase it, is there a new gamer that we've really been neglecting by focusing and trimming down our portfolio that this could reach out and bring into the company? Can it drive engagement? So there's a lot of different things that companies are trying to do, and taking a few of them and connecting how this potentially may seem like a crazy idea, you don't understand it, but it has these things that could connect to it that really, really helps. So that's kind of been the pragmatic approach to pitching creative that I really take in from my technical background and brought to our creative team.
That's great. Cool.
So if we switch gears a little bit to, we've heard about kind of creatively pitching, but what about being on the end of where you're hearing all these pitches and you're the decision maker with the money, Ada?
One of many. So as Jeannie mentioned before, I look after the business development business for Microsoft and gaming. The pitches that I see range from little independent developers all the way to studios at AAA publishers. And primarily, we're assessing them, evaluating them for marketing partnerships, development, and sometimes publishing as well. In a former role where I ran the interactive group at Lucasfilm, I was hearing pitches for IP licensing for Star Wars, which some of you may have heard of. What I thought I could share with you guys is just some insights from the publisher perspective in terms of what we look for and what happens sort of before, during, and after the pitch. So one of the things I would say before doing the pitch is really to know who your audience is. Sounds like a very basic advice, but it's really true, because sometimes knowing who you're going to walk into the room with is really important, because you can have marketing and publishing people in there. It can range, may have other creative directors and art directors and business development people, or even consumer products people, and they're all looking for something different. So gathering that information up front and knowing who your audience is and what they're looking for is important. So it speaks to what Tatiana was saying, is that sometimes it's really important that you pitch sort of from the heart and sort of who you are, but you also want to make sure you connect with who you're pitching to. And that really helps, because those are the people who will actually be making the decisions, whether or not it's partnering or funding you or publishing. So that's sort of the prep work sort of in advance. And that helps. At least you can highlight, certain things in your pitch that will resonate with the audience, and it will also help you anticipate questions that they may ask you during the pitch. So then some things during the pitch, when you're actually sharing your pitch with them, really it's about giving them confidence in you and your game and your ability to deliver something on time and on budget. It's probably a very common theme you hear from the publisher perspective. So it's really, what can you do during that time to really tell them about yourself, your passion, your team, who makes up your team, and it's really helping the decision makers honestly feel good about their decision. So they want to have, trust in you. If you have a track record, even if you've never built a game together as a team, but individually you have done certain projects, you want to talk about all of those. So really provide that information. And then knowing what their goals are, you can actually share what's important and say, in terms of your game, you can highlight that they might want to know, if they're launching a new platform, how you can be a technical showcase or how you can be a great retail demo. So there are certain things that you want to make sure you hit on during the presentation. I'd also say that having a trailer or a prototype, an actual working demo where people can actually touch and feel the game, is really important if you're at that stage in your development. Because sometimes talking about it and showing pretty artwork, in a PowerPoint presentation only gets you so far. Sometimes you can talk about the fun in the game, but it's better for them to experience the fun. And then I'd say after the pitch, even when you're in the room, is make sure that you it's just as important for you to ask questions as the publisher to ask questions of you. So make sure you know what your ask is. Like, are you asking for marketing, featuring, or dollars, or budget? So knowing what your budget and what your timelines are really important to share, because, maybe they're looking overall at a portfolio and they've got a specific release window that they're trying to solve for. Or they're looking to complement their portfolio. Oh, I don't have this kind of game in my portfolio, so I want to bring that into my portfolio. So those are the things that are kind of ticking in our minds as we listen to sort of different pitches, in addition to looking for something innovative, something creative like we've never heard of before. So those are some of the things that we're looking for. So after the pitch, it's fair game to ask what the decision-making process is. And then another thing is to ask and see if all the decision makers are actually in the room. So this is super basic, but sometimes you have a few different stakeholders, one person can't make the meeting. And then what ends up happening is, great, can you share your pitch? And we'll go share it with whoever that person not in the room is. And if it's at all possible, you always want to be the person to pitch the game to any decision makers, because you're the one who can best represent your game and your creative. Sometimes it's not always possible, and they can, you know, some of the materials need to be shared around, but that's also important to know when you're in the room. So those are some tips and tricks from the minds of publishers.
Awesome. Great. Shanae.
Great. I'm going to stand up, actually, because I want to stand up and stretch my diaphragm, be the weird person here who's standing up. All right, so good afternoon, everyone. So we just finished talking about how to give a pitch, how to receive a pitch, and how it feels hearing the pitch. So I'm going to talk about what happens after the pitch. So first I want to ask everyone a question. That question is, have you ever failed at anything? If you have ever failed at anything, raise your hand. Okay. Awesome. Okay, I'm in the right place. So I'm in good company. So I'm going to tell you something real quick, and it's something that I wish that someone had told me when I first started out pitching. So before I say it, please know that I really, really, really mean this. I hope you fail. I hope you fail. And I know right now you folks are thinking, oh, this is one of those talks. Well, it kind of maybe it is, right? But you know, honestly, after being in the industry for so long, I've come to a better understanding of what failure is, why failure is important, and how failure is not only contributes to success, but it is undeniably critical to success. So let me tell you a little bit about me. Over 15 years in the industry, I've had a lot of successes, and I've had a lot of failures. I would say that failure has probably been as much a constant in my career as success. I've produced million sellers, and I've produced bargain bin darlings. I've produced really big titles, and I've produced titles so obscure they don't even have a Metacritic score. I learned that the best games don't always sell, and I learned that sometimes the worst games sell a whole doggone lot. But when it comes to pitching, most pitches, this is what I learned, most pitches end in failure. And I learned that sometimes that failure is just one person effing one particular thing up, but pitches fail for a lot of reasons. We talked about that a little bit earlier. The release timing's wrong. The audience is wrong. It's been done before. The risk is too high. Like it could be any of these. It could be all of these. It could be none of these. You know, as publishers, we hear a lot of pitches. We hear a ton of pitches. Right now, it's the pitching season. So I've already heard like 3 pitches today. We often look at it like going to a restaurant and just ordering an item off a menu. Now, just because I pick one item on the menu, that doesn't mean that everything else on the menu is terrible, right? That just means that I wanted the fish today, which I know is a terrible analogy, right? I'm comparing your beloved pitch to the catch of the day. I know this, but I mean, honestly, what the point is that publishers pass on pitches for as many reasons as there are pitches. So when I began pitching, I had to become comfortable with the concept of failure, because if you're not comfortable with it, you can't really learn anything from it. So, because I am comfortable with failure, I'm going to share some of my failed pitches with everyone here today. And I would like a little bit of audience participation, if you guys don't mind. I'm going to tell you the pitch, and if you think it was a failed pitch, I want everyone to give me some jazz hands. You guys know jazz hands, right? All right, jazz hands, awesome. It's going to make me feel like these were successful pitches, because people are going to be applauding me. All right, first one up. I once pitched a game that was for an amazing IP that we didn't have the rights to. What do you guys think? Was that a failed pitch?
Failed pitch?
Oh, yeah, that one failed hard. All right, second one up. I once pitched a party game to a publisher that specialized in JRPGs. You guys think that one failed? Also failed hard. All right. Last one. I once pitched a game that was an April Fool's joke that went a little bit too far. What do you guys think? Failed game? Failed pitch? Ah, we actually made that one. Dark Void Zero, by the way. So with every failure, though, it gave me a chance to learn something more. It gave me a chance to take a step back, regroup, ask for help, ask for feedback, and just improve. And that doesn't mean I didn't fail again. Like, that's not the point, right? But failing in new ways is sort of progress on its own. What they don't tell you is there is a lot of failure in success. And there's also a lot of success in failure. And why I'm on the topic as well, I know that Ada mentioned this as well, ask for feedback. Please ask for feedback for your pitches. Like, as publishers, we have feedback. Trust me, we want to give it to you. But sometimes we're not very good at going beyond like a simple yay or a nay. So please ask for feedback from us. And as publishers, we should try and give feedback when we can too. It helps you guys. It helps us. It just makes the process a lot less painful. And so to close this out, I actually want to give you folks a list, because we love lists, right? So a list of 4 fun things to do when your game pitch fails. So number 1, review your notes. Feedback comes at all different times during the pitch. It comes before the pitch, it comes after the pitch, but mostly it comes during the pitch. I have had folks ask me, should I take notes during my pitch? You should absolutely take notes during your pitch. I'm amazed at how few people take notes during the pitch. Number 2, ask questions. Ada was mentioning this as well. Ask questions. If, as a publisher, I'm looking for great games, but I'm also looking for great partners. If I'm asking you questions after your pitch, it's because I'm interested in you, I'm interested in your team, I'm interested in what you guys just presented to us. If you're pitching to me and you're not asking me questions, you're missing an opportunity. Like, this is the start of a relationship that could last 2 or 3 years at a minimum. Number 3, don't debate feedback. I know. I heard some designers in the room. I know, got a little antsy here. Not all feedback is valid, but all feedback is valuable. And the time you have with a publisher is also valuable. So feedback is valuable. So receive the feedback, but then it's your choice of what to do with it because it's your pitch. And then lastly, number 4, is there's no such thing as a perfect pitch. If you're ready to repitch your game, after it's failed, repitch your game to a publisher, that's great, that's fantastic. But make sure that you review your notes, you respond to the feedback you got the last time as well. Make sure that you're targeting it toward your audience. If your pitch has the exact same problems this time that it had last time, you can't expect a different result. So, last thing I've got here, I'll close with, you folks might have seen this little poster going around recently. It goes around on Facebook and on social media every once in a while. For those of you who can't read it, I will read it for you right here. It says, if at first you don't succeed, try 2 more times so that your failure is statistically significant. But honestly, that's what pitching is all about. Failure is actually the best and most consistent teacher you will ever have in your career, besides perhaps the ladies on the stage here. So when I say I hope you fail, it's so that I hope you succeed. Thanks.
It's great. Yeah, I just wanted to add to that. It is so true, because we actually once pitched our pitch, and then the person's like, well, you guys have a long way to go. And we were like, we actually got greenlit yesterday. Yeah, so it really is sometimes a bit of luck.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Those pitches that I mentioned are all absolutely real pitches. I know some folks sort of laughed when I said, oh, I pitched a game for a great IP that we don't have the rights to. That is a common thing that we get. Folks will say, I've got a great idea for a Spider-Man game. And
this
it's
is
like,
what I did in my interview. I mean, yeah. That's exactly what I did. Yeah. Like, my very first pitch was that. It was like, this guy's awesome. And they're just like, why are you telling us?
And it winds up being a situation where like it is like, that's an amazing game. Do you need help? Do you have that IP? Oh, no, we don't. Can you help us negotiate with Marvel or Sony or Lucasfilm, like wherever? And that's a difficult conversation to have. So
a couple of questions just to build on this. I've heard out of a few of you guys talking about kind of finding that right partner. So what are some of the ways that you think about it in terms of who is the right partner to pitch to? Like, do you have kind of criteria that you think about ahead of time? Or what advice would you have for those in the audience to think about that?
As a small game developer, like, if I'm going to pitch to Microsoft, I have to understand that everyone in line ahead of me is probably looking for much larger budgets to make a much larger impact for their bottom line than I am. And also probably way more famous or has made things that have sold a lot more. Because you're going to assume that you're somewhere in the stack and that it's a good stack to be in, but you have to understand where you are in it, I think, and not have unrealistic expectations. So, like,
when I have conversations with people, one of the first things I try to do is say, like, all right, well, so we typically operate with budgets of, say, $300,000 to $3 million, but we're thinking of moving to 10 to 20 for this next title so that we can have this kind of an impact on the audience that we've already built up with these smaller titles. I let them know that I know I'm not selling games like hotcakes right now, but the Phenomena is a strong brand in a space that is growing and will be increasingly diverse. And, like, the reason I started building the company was to build the brand to make the $20 million game that comes out in 2020 and crushes it, and you should have half the money, you know? Like, that's the pitch, is that I'm already working my way up the chain so that I can be in that position, but I know that I'm not there. So I think understanding that your partner probably has other partnerships that are more valuable right now, but that you want to become one of those, and really owning that in the conversation means that it's very authentic and you don't come off sounding like, yeah, just give me $50 million, you know, like, I'm worth it, you know, treat myself with your money. Like, that's not an attractive way to pitch. So I think it's, for me as a small developer, I think knowing that I'm tiny is important. And honestly, working at EA early in my career really helped, because I've sat in those meetings. Like, I've heard pitches, and I've been an external producer on people that are not on budget and not on time, and I know what those meetings look like. And you know, and the other thing is that I think if you are used to being through the mill a little bit, you realize that the people that are inside the organization that are funding your game and that are dealing with you on a day-to-day basis, like the kinds of questions you can ask them, like, who's going to be in the room, that sort of stuff, when you're talking to the person who's at the lowest level of contact, they're like sandwiched between all the developers that are so thirsty for money and everybody above them that has so much email and so little time. So they're doing God's work. Like, they are really nice people. And they will give you as much information as they can, but sometimes they don't know. Like, I've had people say to me, I tried to book that meeting, and I'm not sure that so-and-so is going to be there, and I don't want to waste your time, but we might have to take the pitch. And, you know, that's when you make your call. You go, all right, well, I trust you. You've been straight with me so far, and you've answered most of my email, which is amazing, because I know you have less time than I do. So let's go for it. And then if, you know, so-and-so's not in the room, then you can show them the pitch. It's not ideal, but you learn to accept that sometimes that person in the little wafer between the money and the needy is not going to be able to have perfect information. A lot of developers complain about people that are in DevRel, and I think it's just silly, because those people, they love games. They want to make games, but they're helping you get your game funded, and that's like such an act of sacrifice and kindness that, like, you should really appreciate it.
Coming from a place where I didn't really have a choice who we ultimately pitched to, it was within our org, it was within EA. One thing that I feel we did really smart that's analogous to that is early on we network within our company and we identified some champions who had same long-term goals as we did of wanting to push EA in new directions and wanted to go after some of these new players or attempting to break ground on innovative business models. And we pitched to them first, and they gave us feedback first. They were with us throughout the journey. They were almost like our personal board of directors. And they also made sure that people kind of started hearing about us before we were even in the room. So if you are, like, within a publisher working internally, that is a good way to start building momentum around your idea before the pitch meeting.
Ada, did you?
So I was going to say that, that sometimes looking at, who do your homework before you, decide who to pitch to, because sometimes, as Robin was saying, publishers are looking for a big budget titles, but other times they also have programs that cater to the type of game and budgets that you're looking for. So at Microsoft, it might be the ID at Xbox program. There are, like, EA Originals and at Take-Two with the smaller, you know. So a lot of publishers now are sort of expanding their breadth of, you know, titles that they're looking to get. And so finding sort of that right contact and right sort of group to actually talk to can be sort of a good fit.
And to add on to that, that's absolutely true. Like, I gave the example during my talk of pitching a party game to a JRPG publisher. That was a terrible idea. I didn't do my research. I didn't do my homework at that time. Right? I was really young in my career. But yeah, I mean, doing your research also means that when you get to the point where you're really, like, you see the conversation is proceeding, you can ask good questions. If you're walking into a room and you don't know who you're talking to and you don't know anything, even the publicly available information, then it makes me think, oh, okay, well, you know, like we said, we take a lot of pitches every single day, every single week, especially during this time of the year. We want to make sure that our time is used wisely. We want to make sure that your time is used wisely. So make sure that you do that research. That's going to be really critical towards making sure that the conversation is as productive as possible and we don't wind up having to, I mean, a lot of pitches end in like, oh, sorry, we didn't think about that. Can we get that to you again later? It's like, well, you just lost an opportunity, right? Like, we're face-to-face right now. Being face-to-face and being able to present your game idea is the best way to be able to present your game idea. Doing it over email, doing it over the phone, these are all things you can do, but they're not as impactful for these sort of creative endeavors.
So to kind of follow on that, is there a minimum bar that you guys would say is the bar for when your pitch is ready to be pitched? And how do you kind of think about it in those terms? Because sometimes we have a problem where we think everything's got to be perfect before we share an idea.
Yeah, I was just thinking, it really depends. Like, I've had very successful pitches over dinner where I'm just like, you know, I was thinking of this thing, and I don't know, you said you were interested in this thing, so let's just talk about it. And they're like, that sounds awesome. And you, oh, okay. Like, that, and I wasn't prepared really to pitch it. But I'd been thinking about it in the back of my mind for a while. Whereas in other cases, I've worked forever and ever on something with someone else and workshopped the shit out of it and had it go through the meeting and get greenlit and then get killed by someone above the person in the organization because they didn't know their audience. And so I worked so hard on that pitch and made it perfect, and then the person above me just, you know, they just didn't do their homework or they were busy or someone, like in one case, someone new got hired in the organization and just said no to everything that had been said yes to 2 weeks ago. It's very difficult when you've been hiring up because you were told yes and paperwork's in process and suddenly it goes away. But the thing to remember is that it couldn't have been more perfect in that situation, right? I did the best that I could and so did they. So we just moved on from it. And actually that's come back around and now it's greenlit. So, you know, 5 years later, business needs changed. It's exactly the same kind of stuff. Like, well, we didn't think we wanted women to buy this stuff, but apparently if they don't buy it, no one else does either. Oh, whoops. You know, I mean, that's like the whole story of VR right now. And like, so things that I have been saying for years, and suddenly they are valuable, whereas before they were not. And that was just a lack of data. No one knew. It was a different time.
So I just wanted to elaborate on something Tatiana was saying about soft pitching, sort of like getting internal stakeholders to buy in on something. And then sometimes, like if you meet somebody from a company, like you might just say, hey, I've got an idea and here's how far along it is. Or, you know, it's really, you know, I just have, you know, it's in my head. And, you know, so, and I think you can get some early feedback before you actually do sort of maybe a more formal or an official pitch. But really getting people to buy in and someone would like, great, you should come in. You should come pitch that to our team. So even getting an invitation knows like, and then you can help sort of get the materials prepared and whatever those expectations are. But you're right, you can be at all different stages and a pitch can happen anytime. And what Robin was saying is like, sometimes it's the right time depending on who your audience is. Sometimes they just have an idea and sometimes you've got the whole, you know, working build that you are ready for them to play, so.
Yeah, also adding on to that and jumping off of something Tatiana mentioned earlier, you mentioned that when you first were doing pitches, you did like 1,000 pitches. I don't know if that was an accurate number, but a large number of pitches, right? And there was some success and there was some failure, and a lot of the failure helped teach you what to look out for, what success could look like. I think a lot of times, especially as people from underrepresented groups, as women, as people of color, of folks from from any underrepresented group and marginalized group within this industry, we sort of talk ourselves out of it a lot. I can tell you that. In general, I'm going to throw a random number out here, but it's probably accurate. I'd say 97% of pitches we get are from white men. We don't get women pitching to us. We don't get people of color pitching to us. And that is not, like, that's a problem that we need to understand and we need to solve, right? And I look at it as not, like, I don't like talking about things like confidence gap or anything like that because I don't subscribe to that or anything. But we've been having some good conversations about, like, why that is. We talk ourselves out of pitching a lot of times because we think that it has to be a perfect pitch. We think that it has to be this watertight thing that no one can ever question the very first time we do it, because we don't ever consider that failure is even part of the process. I mean, I've been to, you know, it was really interesting to hear Robin's description of, like, there are lots of different ways that you pitch, right? Like the pitch over dinner, like we just had pitch over lunch a second ago, right? Like that's absolutely a type of pitch. There's the types of pitches we take at GDC that tend to be a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more time. And then there's the types of pitches we take at E3, which is like 30-minute slots for 10 hours straight. And you have 30 minutes to do your pitch. That is a very different sort of audience. It's a very different stress level. It's a very different everything for that audience, for that space. And I've had folks who've walked into that 30-minute meeting at E3 and just had a sheet of paper and said, with a martini, and said, hey, got some ideas. What do you think? What do you think about this versus this? I'm like, what? Oh, you don't like that one. Well, what about this meets this? So I mentioned that to say that there is a we think the bar for pitching, as marginalized folks, we think the bar for pitching is all the way up here. And that's why we often talk ourselves out of doing it, because we say, I have to have answered every question, know every single thing, and before I walk into a room with anyone. And that's not to say that the bar should be down here, because that's also way too low. But understanding, like, what's reasonable, what the type of pitch is, how many times you have to do a pitch in order to get comfortable with it, and in order to find what success looks like, that's really what it's about.
I was going to say that you can actually practice with your friends. Like, I used to fake pitch because I also had nerves, ideas that I'd made up that were totally absurd. Sometimes movies, but a lot of times they were games. And it's like, when I was the EA, I always used to do this pitch for Lap Dance Hero and Pole Dance Revolution.
I'm not sure where this is going.
Lap Dance Hero, you get two pair of programmable dance pants, pads on the top on one and pads on the bottom on the other, and you just got to do Simon Says. You know, and you do it as a joke, because you're just like, isn't that, but then you're like, but seriously, why doesn't EA make, like, games that actually appeal to adults? Like, why don't we ever have games with sex in them? You know, is it just because we get sued? I mean, like, don't you think that some, I mean, look at Game of Thrones, and you start having these conversations, and you get used to asking the hard questions about something that you have no intention of building. Like, I'm never going to build Pole Dance Hero. I'm not going to do it. But, like, as you get used to practicing, sometimes joking with friends at the business over, you know, drinks or whatever, like, in the long run, you do get, there's something about that weird, you just get over the fear of having to answer or ask a hard question, and you can do it in a totally not serious way. Like, it doesn't have to be the world's, it doesn't have to be the world's best, but it can literally be, those are two of the world's worst ideas. Like, they're not good ideas.
So thinking of hard questions, why don't we open it up? We have a few minutes left. Why don't we open it up for a couple questions? Anyone from the audience? Don't be scared. This is all about pitching your question to these amazing
women.
Anyone
have any games to pitch?
Here, let's.
That's awesome.
Here.
Can you make a short example of what the structure of a good pitch would look like?
So there is different ways to do it depending on the game. So a lot of story-based or story writing games tend to really do world building or lean into the characters, because that's central to the game. Things that lean very heavily into the mechanics, you want to highlight those within your pitch. So like, figure out what your game is, how its strength will be evaluated. And from there, what is the best way to tell your whole message, from the who we are as a studio to why we're making this game to the business end of how does it fit within the portfolio. So what feels the most natural to have that cohesive message? And I would just put all the thoughts down on paper and play around with it. You don't need to necessarily have the whole narrative and then fill in the content. Just put everything you want to say and then take things out, put things in, rearrange things. Once you get to a part where your idea is on paper, the actual structure becomes easier to manage. And do a bit of soft pitching where it's different from when you're looking at something and flipping through it to when you actually have to talk about it. For example, we had these awesome audio transition between some of the slides. And when you actually talk to them, all of a sudden they interrupt you talking and it's super awkward. You're like, and this part, like it's not, it was super cool when we were flipping through them, not super cool to talk to. So just so do a little bit of both and play around with it.
How about another question? Anybody? Yep.
Hello, hi. When you're pitching, based on your experience, do you think it's more, are they more interested in the story versus the character versus the atmosphere?
I think that also just really depends on the game, right? Yeah.
I think it also largely, we talked a little bit about like the, like where you're pitching, when you're pitching, who you're pitching to. The audience is really critical. I'm a senior producer. Me and my boss, executive producer, we've been involved in the creative side of things, and we're currently producers. We're highly interested in the production side. One of the most common things that people don't do when they do their pitches is they get you interested. They have this hook. You're like, oh man, this is awesome, cool. How much does it cost? Oh, we really haven't thought about that yet. Like, we don't. Do you have a team? Well, we were looking. You know, we're thinking about that, and like. Yeah, 6 months later, right? So it's like, you know, when you're pitching, like there's a whole process for it, right? When we take in pitches, we usually ask ourselves two questions. Like when we hear a pitch, should this game be made? Is this team the team that can make this game? If the answer to both those questions is not yes, then we're kind of done at that point. So like to go back and to answer your question just a little bit, I think they both kind of overlap. The creative side of it, absolutely know who your audience is for it. We get pitches oftentimes where someone is really excited about the underlying stats back end, and they want to talk to you about that for 15 minutes, and that's super interesting. It's usually not the right place. It's not the best way to use your time at that point. But then also making sure that you do have that production side to it, even if it's just a high level thing of like, hey, here's how long we think it's going to take. We know that this is a process. Game development, it's an art and a science.
So. Yeah, I end every pitch with a headcount plan with a rough person per month estimate for everybody. So like, let's just say it's $20,000 per person per month because you live in San Francisco and rent is expensive and you're recruiting against people that are getting recruited into jobs where they're paid $500,000 a year to mostly ride bikes and eat ice cream. Like, you know, you have to be competitive, right? So you say, okay, this is gonna be 20 people on this game, it's gonna be 2 years long, they're gonna cost $500,000 a person, so this is how many millions of dollars a game is gonna cost. Then we're gonna put in $3 million of marketing on our side, we're gonna put in this kind of staff to make sure that people don't quit in the middle of the project, we're gonna do this and this, and that raises the budget to $17 million. And you can take five off or add five to it, and then you can extend the schedule this way or that way. So I maybe run two or three different tabs with different budgets, a high, low, and a kind of like what I'd actually like. And then I say, you know, if you really think this should be made, then let's work on the numbers that make sense for you based on what you think the market size will be. And I always ask them, how will you help me make this game more successful? Why should I make it with you? Because you might think like, well, any opportunity is a good opportunity, but you know, it's kind of like any date's not a great date. You could be at home watching Game of Thrones by yourself, having the ice cream, instead of being bored, you know, by someone who just doesn't shut up. So like, you know, not every opportunity is an opportunity. Sometimes an opportunity is a waste of your time. And I think that when I said it's about you and your goals, it's like, you gotta value your time and know that you're worth it. And if somebody doesn't want to work with you because of some small dumb thing you said in a meeting or some silly thing on the pitch, then they're probably not going to be a good partner.
Yeah, you probably don't want to work with them.
Yeah,
either.
They would just be nitpicking you. So,
and consider what is the strongest part that you have developed. If it's a story game and you guys are great at character, really lean into that. You're going to shine where you're strongest, even if not everything is in place. If it's the world that's been created and not the characters, lean into that. So the thing that you're most comfortable, like that is like in your T-shaped team, the T, lean into that.
One last note. For when you're preparing your pitch, prepare to be interrupted. There's going to be lots and lots and lots of questions. You're going to have this beautiful pitch that you spent months figuring out, and it works perfectly, and then somebody's going to ask a question that throws complete turmoil into it three slides in and say, please, can you guys skip all that stuff? I know that. Can you just jump to the end so we can talk about money? be prepared for that. Be prepared for those kinds of eventualities. That's not necessarily a bad thing, by the way, just because someone wants to, that's just the way that a lot of different teams work.
And just sorry, one final note on that is just is just to make sure. Sorry, now I'm interrupting. Is then make sure you emphasize the most important thing up front. Don't save the best for last because you may never get there. So just
also
speaking of last, I hate to break the party up, but Angela's gonna give us the evil eye here. All of these women are open. I think they have time a little bit after this. So if you have more questions for them, please don't hesitate to reach out. And don't forget to also stop by and talk with Katie and Nate, too, if you have ideas or you just want to learn more. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.